from KQED.
You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Leah Garchik says she's been chided by readers of her San Francisco Chronicle column throughout her career for being too positive and too optimistic. And in a recent column, she responded to that criticism by enumerating some of the things she hates, including raisins, large groups of bicycle riders, and VIP sections. She recently retired as a columnist for the San Francisco Chronicle, and she joins us this segment to talk about her 47 years at the paper and her observations, both positive and negative, about the city by the bay. Welcome, Leah Garchik.
Thank you, Michael.
And mazel tov for quite a career. 47. I know you started in swaddling clothes or in diapers, but...
Yeah. I don't get, you know, about that column, about things I hate, when it was all finished, I had already submitted it to the editors. I realized one that I hadn't mentioned that I hate more than anything I'd written about. And I just wanted to mention this to you, a master of the language, because I bet you agree. Emojis.
I'm not crazy about them, actually, now that you
mentioned. We work so hard to speak English.
But, you know, when I thought of the things you did mention, like raisins and everything, I thought, this just shows how nice you are. You can't come up with more animus or enmity than those kinds of things.
Oh,
I mean, when
you
people
don't know
think about
the
things
depth
they
of
hate,
my hatred for raisins.
Well, I guess I don't. I think about all those raisins in the sun and all that sort of thing. But, you know, the reality is that you have had this, I think, deserved reputation as being a kind columnist and not necessarily an acerbic or, I mean, you can be witty and have been on many occasions and so forth and have a bit of a rapier here and there, but that wasn't your métier.
No, I think I was probably snarkier when I was younger. And part of that was that I was writing, when the column started, about people that I didn't see. I wrote a lot about the Royals. It was really easy to be snarky about the Royals. They never look you in the eye at a cocktail party and say, oh, how could you have said that? So, but it's pretty easy to be snarky. I tried to put my snark between the lines.
So Prince Harry was the son of whom? Did we get that straight?
Oh, my God. Did I get a lot of...
Well, remember, President Trump tweeted the Prince of Wales, but he said W-H-A-L-E-S.
Yes.
The Prince of Wales. Yeah. What is it you have about the Royals? What?
Well, right now, actually, in my dotage, I really abhor the whole idea of royalty. I could have added that to my list of things I don't like. I think it's absurd in 2019 to even entertain the thought that one person is better than another at birth.
They're also the biggest welfare recipients just about
yes.
on the planet. We don't necessarily have to go there. When you've often been associated, of course, as the person who followed Herb Kane, the columnist who followed Herb Kane. Mm-hmm. I know you worked for Art Hoppe early in the day mm-hmm. and kind of didn't have to necessarily claw or fight your way up the ladder, but you went up that ladder and became a columnist. And when Kane left, you had a whole different sensibility. I mean, you brought that to the column. Kane was known for his three-dot journalism. You got this kind of public eavesdropping thing that was your signature.
Yeah, I was always very determined not to try and be a Herb Kane imitator. It was realized by the editors and by me that there needed to be a column that I always called talking over the back fence, where people could share with each other what their daily experiences were, with a mix of sort of celebrity stuff and occasionally something that was actually news. But I didn't want to do it as Herb had done it. There were So Name Freaks, for example, which he did, if, for anybody listening that doesn't know what that's when you say that a man named Michael Gardner is actually a gardener. But that was Herb's specialty, and he wrote a lot about them, and people have sent them to me over the years. And I always said, I don't want to even have the appearance that I'm trying to walk in Herb Kane's footsteps, because his footsteps were huge, and nobody could wield the power that he did or enjoy. At least I couldn't.
It was unbelievable. I remember the first time my name appeared in Herb Kane, I went into the bank and the bank teller that I work with from time to time said to me, Michael, your name was in Herb Kane this morning. I mean, it was with such drama and such excitement.
I know. I went to an open school night once for one of my sons, and I forget, I was talking to a teacher, and the teacher said, what do you do? And I said, oh, I write a column in the Chronicle. And the only question was, do you know Herb Cain?
I was one of those who liked Herb Cain, and I believe you were as well. But there were those who said, you know, he was snobby and he was too much a part of cafe society and too much gossip and all that sort of thing. Got a lot of that kind of criticism, which I don't think you have received.
I had a wonderful picture on my desk, a snapshot that someone had sent me of Herb and Art Hoppe in the picket line. And when the Chronicle went on strike, and that's kind of a talisman to me. I took it home and have it on my desk at home now.
He also loved San Francisco, which you do, and there were paeans and lyricism in his writing about San Francisco. And I want to talk to you about the changing, because 47 years, I mean, you go back to the beginning of the Transamerica building.
Yes, so it had just been, what did they do, unveil it? Did they pull a sheet off
right.
When we arrived?
And but this is extraordinary to think about, just, you know, the history that you have here. And I'm wondering, I was just reading my friend David Talbot, you know, writing about, lamenting, as he often does, how much things have changed with the techies and with so many changes that have been extraordinary. Let's hear your thoughts on that.
Oh, well, it's hard to separate my thoughts on that from my own the thing that's happened to me, as it happens to every person on the planet, is getting older and having a different view. So I see the city is that the pillars, the iconic figures in San Francisco are not the same iconic figures that they were for years, which was the president of the Opera Board or even politicians. I mean, the real power, I would say, and I'm just pulling this out of the air, that Mark Benioff is a more powerful figure than London Breed is.
Oh, I agree. And you don't see Cyril Magnus' name much anymore, do you?
Well, no.
You used to see it in Cain all the time. What about the changes in journalism? I mean, we're talking, of course, about the advent of social media. You've been through all that.
I have been. And it's the advent of social media is, I'm risking sounding like a totally grandma, but it is so antithetical to the way in which you and I were brought up. And I was brought up as a columnist, which is, you know, just keep quiet about yourself and do a good job, and that will speak for itself. Social media is about touting your accomplishments. So I do that. I can say that I'm not very apt at it. And it goes against something that's buried deep inside of me. But as a way of transporting information, I mean, of telegraphing information, one thing that it's changed profoundly is that it used to be that one of the pleasures of working at the paper was getting the news first. So if you were there one day, I could come home at night and say to my husband, oh, guess what's going to be on page one tomorrow? That's all disappeared because everybody gets the news via tweets.
It's not only disappeared, but the average age, I believe, of newspaper writers has gone considerably up to the point where, I mean, most young people are getting their news online.
Yes.
I think the average age is over like in the 50s now. Let's talk about newsroom moments for you. I mean, because you were in the newsroom for quite a while, and you were there in Jonestown, Milk Moscone, assassinations,
and
Loma Prieta.
In Jonestown, there was a Chronicle reporter named Ron Javers who went to Jonestown, and we happened to be friendly with him, my husband and I, and they had kids about the same age as ours. So that Sunday morning when we all woke up to the terrible news, my husband said, oh, you know, his wife must be desperate. We didn't know whether Ron had survived, which he did. But maybe you ought to call and see if we could take the kids off her hand. And I said, oh, we don't want to, like, insert ourselves into this. But he insisted, and I did call. And his wife said, oh, we'd be so happy. And remember, there were reports of that there may have been Jonestown hit squads going around the town and other people may have been targeted. She said, the police tell us we have to get out of our house. We're coming over there. We're coming over to you. So she brought the two kids, and she came, and police came. It was, you know, my boys were excited beyond belief. And that whole day, they hung around the house. Other editor's wife brought food. It was as though we were in a state of siege. And every time the doorbell rang, somebody with their hand on a weapon in their pocket would get up and accompany me to the front door.
You mentioned your boys are both jazz musicians?
No.
One is a jazz musician.
The younger one is a jazz musician, does a lot of work with the Kronos. He is an arranger for the Kronos. And the older one, you'll like this, is a high school librarian, and his wife is a high school librarian, and they live in Iowa.
And what about other newsroom moments? I mean, the Milk Moscone, for example, assassinations. Can you recreate that in your mind and give us a sense of what it was like to go through?
I was then, I'm trying to remember. They happened in the morning. It was late morning, wasn't it?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. So I was working for Art Hoppe, and I was in the office. But the thing, I can't really say that. I mean, I was shocked. Like, that's an understatement, like as every San Francisco was, every San Franciscan was. But I worked in a different room then, working for Hoppe. The feature writers and the entertainment writers were in a different room. So, and I was working 4 hours a day. My kids were small. I can't say that I really felt the brunt of that in the newspaper office. I was separated from it.
It's one of those moments, though, that we remember, like the Kennedy assassination,
yes,
or, you know, 9/11 and so forth. Just the impact of it was just so extraordinary.
And we all thought it actually had to do with Jonestown when it first happened, because it was so soon after.
We're talking with Leah Garchik, and you may have some memories of San Francisco going back. I'd like to also pose the question to listeners about the changing nature of journalism, as well as the changing nature of San Francisco, and get your thoughts on that or any questions you might have about Leah's sterling career. You may want to join us now, and I invite you to do that. And when I say thoughts about it, you know, the whole cultural institutions in San Francisco have changed. Even the kind of, here's some of your thoughts on this for a moment, Leah, if we could. I mean, just the nature, you're talking about Benioff's power and so forth as opposed to London Breed's. You don't have the kind of support that you used to have for, let's say, the arts. You simply don't. The Silicon Valley money doesn't go into the arts anymore. In fact, a lot of Benioff's money has gone into homelessness.
Which, who could argue with that, right? In priorities, and a lot of the Silicon Valley companies, I mean, the biggest companies, have foundations that deal with international issues. So eradicating polio or eradicating diseases, various epidemics.
I'm also very interested in what's going to happen with tech. I mean, how can we move forward with our technology and connecting people and those kinds of things? They want metrics.
The cultural institutions, I think, are worried. I mean, there have been some great innovations. For instance, have you ever been to the Symphony's Soundbox?
Yes, I have.
It's wonderful, and it's crowded, and it's young people. It has to do with somehow lowering the amounts that that people have to pay to go to things. But I just think sometimes that maybe we ought to sort of just start all over again. We were just we went to Iowa to see one of my sons, and on the way we fly from here to St. Louis. And in St. Louis, the zoo is free, and the Science Museum, where we spent a few hours because we were with our grandchild and son and his daughter-in-law, is free. And I thought, how is it? St. Louis is not a rich city. How is it that this could be free there? And in San Francisco, blessings upon those institutions, and I love all the museums and we're members and all that, but the rates for people to come, and if they're not members, are astronomical.
Now, listeners always like to comment on that as well, but I'm going to give out the phone number, and please join us with Leah Garchik. Questions about her column, memories about her column, or for that matter, some thoughts you might have about the changing nature of San Francisco and how dramatic and what that brings to your mind, and also changing nature of journalism. I'd like to hear your thoughts. Toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786. We welcome you right now, 866-733-6786. You can also, of course, join us by getting in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to kqed.org. And I noticed you were in Miss Bigelow's column. She calls you Garchik, right?
Yes.
You call her Miss?
I call her Catherine.
Let me read some listener comments that are coming in here. Listener writes, San Francisco has changed under Leah Garchik's feet, as it were. I wonder if she's still optimistic about its future.
I am, because I'm by nature an optimist, or a Pollyanna, it's been called, too. I see misery. I try not to ignore it. I try to look panhandlers in the eye, whether I'm going to give them something or not, and more often than most times it's not. I am optimistic about the future.
It's good to hear. Here's another listener writes, please ask Leah Garchik to recount her experience on the warmly regarded local KLW trivia show Mind Over Matter. And of course, also featured our mutual friend Jerry Nachman, may he rest in peace, and
yes.
Dana Rodriguez. It was
yes.
fun for you, I'll bet, wasn't it?
It was great fun, yes. I did that for about 20 years, I believe. I think they asked me to participate. Dana and Jerry cooked up this quiz show, which was a general interest quiz show. And I think they asked me to participate because they needed a woman, basically. They knew it was not right to be just guys. So Dana knows everything about movies. You could ask him who won the 1947 Oscar for camera work. And
I can attest to that.
Tell you. And Jerry knew about Rodgers and Hart songs and comedians and all that.
So what was your strong suit? What did you bring to the table?
You know, words, actually. Word puzzles. I'm a big Scrabble player. So word puzzles, people would call with those.
Did you really, speaking of words, say Tsar Nicholas was offed?
I did. And I remember the editor of the paper, oh, Michael, you'll love this, said to me, your grandparents may have approved of that description, but we don't.
Let me bring some callers aboard here. We'll go first to you. Michael, you're on the air. Good morning. Join us.
Hi. Leah, I just have loved your column, and it broke my heart. And I agree with you about raisins, by the way. But I have a question about what's your feeling about the school board trying to destroy the Washington mural? I know that children there feel traumatized by it, but it doesn't seem as if the school has done a good job explaining about the mural.
All right, a good question, an important question. I have to say I actually like raisins. I'm sorry, almost apologetic to say that, but since he brought it up as well. But the Washington High mural, some thoughts on it?
Yeah, I think it's terrible to destroy it, actually. I think we must not forget what people used to think, and it was painted as from everything I've read about Aron Seff, is that the name of the artist, who it was painted to show the misery of those times, and to pretend that there was no misery is to deny history and not to learn anything from it. So I was, you know, it made me think of, we were in Budapest a few years ago, and there's, oh, it's terrible. I know Godwin's Law. You shouldn't talk about the Holocaust, but I'm about to.
Godwin's Law?
That's called Godwin's Law when you're having a discussion and you invoke the Holocaust as a metaphor, but as a paradigm, I think is the word. But the central synagogue was destroyed by the Nazis, who turned it into a stable and did terrible things. And it's all been reconstructed and beautifully shiny, and it's a wonderful tourist attraction. Bizarrely, in a country that's quite anti-Semitic right now. And I think that's to deny history. So I think that mural should stay. If you want to put a plaque on it emphasizing that it shows the injustices and cruelty of the era, then that's fine. But painting over it is, I think, a big mistake.
We had a whole debate on it, and that debate is in our archives. And you don't usually polemicize. You didn't in your column, did you, very
no,
much?
No, I didn't.
Why? I mean, because you have strong feelings and opinions. You just express one.
Yeah, well, strangely, I had a real sense of kind of representing the Chronicle, and the editorial page would have a strong opinion about something like that. I also didn't, it's hard to write, for me at least, to write gracefully from a soapbox. I didn't want to be the person putting my opinion on every subject. I feared I would become Miss Prissy or Miss Know-It-All.
You remember the name Jim Eason, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Old-time broadcaster, talking about our longevity here by just mentioning a name like that. But he used to kind of criticize Kane, and he would say, you know, what we do in talk radio is we hear people and they criticize and they state opinions and so forth. It's not two ways in terms of Kane's column. He was very harsh on Kane. But you've pointed out, and I think part of what you've done in your column, you talk about as a triangle. It's not only the boss, the editor who's above you, but they're also your readers. And you were very conscious of bringing, and I don't know that Kane, I mean, Kane obviously was getting scoops from readers all the time and bringing them in. But it was very important that you served your readers in your judgment, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And brought them into the column.
Yes. And they were so interesting. I had the experience once of being on a jury, and the most interesting time was the deliberations, because people, intelligent people, had other thoughts and other things that they'd heard and were willing to listen to each other. And so writing the column in that way, I mean, people would write with all kinds of views that weren't mine, but make intelligent cases. So that was a wonderful conversation. And I've actually made friends with some of the readers and had meals, shared meals with them. What a great open door that is between the columnist and the readers. One other thing, that even in the last week I wrote the column, I got a letter from someone saying, oh, goodbye. And by the way, I was once in Herb Kane 20 years ago.
You had someone who wrote 1,000 letters to you almost every day, right?
Yeah.
Here's Doug. Doug, join us.
Hello, Leah.
Yes.
I just wanted to tell you, I was producing shows in the casino some years ago. And I wrote you and said, I've got a comedian coming up. I can't remember who it was. I just figured it was Mark. Not only put it in a column, left a message.
Doug, I'm sorry, your call's breaking up here. We're not, you're not coming through. Let me. He was just appreciating that you publicized an event, and of course, he did a lot of that, and it served an important purpose. But you had to attend all those events. I would see you at so many of them, and you always had a pleasant expression on your face. But to some extent, weren't some of those maybe borderline endurable?
The events, performances, are always a pleasure. Pleasure.
I'm not talking about the performances. I'm talking about more of the social soirees and those kinds of things.
Right. Fundraising auctions, unendurable.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that should have gone on your list, right?
My husband had always a pass, who was very patiently at my side for many events. But when the auction came up, he was out of there. So, as a writer, always called myself drivel-o-matic. I could sit down and write about some event. And that may be true in conversation at events, too.
Well, you were seated with that great conversationalist Paris Hilton at one point, I believe.
Huh? Oh, yeah.
And what was this about Kim Kardashian on your retirement cake?
Oh, yes. Well, the very wonderful woman who planned a retirement party at the Chronicle said the Chronicle has discovered a baker, a good baker of good cakes, but who takes photographs and can put them on the cake. So the party planner said to me, Leah, you know, we're going to put a photograph of you on the cake, and maybe you should look at all the photographs in the file with me so you can pick which one you like. So we looked at all the photographs, and I hated them all. I mean, this is important to be on a cake. You want to look your very best. So I went back to my desk with the issue unresolved, and suddenly I had a notion. And I said, let's put Kim Kardashian on the cake. And I want a picture with her butt sticking out.
And so, got what you wished for.
That's what I wished for. That had to be passed by HR, who agreed that it would be okay. But I'm hoping if you weren't going to ask me about my legacy at the Chronicle, this may be my most important legacy, that from here on out, everybody who retires will get to put whoever they want on their cake.
Well, let's talk about your legacy for a moment. I mean, what columns particularly do you take great pride in, or do you think may stand for what's the best of your work?
Well, I actually like the... I got a lot of pleasure from writing the daily column. It never felt arduous to me. But the things that I take most pride in that last the longest are longer pieces. There was a piece about Mirla Zellerbach and about how she died. She was a believer in compassion and choices. You knew Mirla, I think.
Yes, I did, and I admired that column you did on her. Yeah.
So that was something Mirla and I talked as she was getting sicker and sicker for months. And I felt I had told the story she wanted told, which was very satisfying. I did something when Ken Burns' Vietnam series was about to be broadcast on KQED and around the country. I did something about our very... scary draft experiences, my husband's being drafted and what that meant in our lives. And I got buckets of mail on both those.
Both
things.
Personal stories to some degree. I mean, because Mirla was a friend and your yeah. husband facing the draft and so forth. And I want to read a couple more comments, some panegyric type of comments as we conclude here. Stephen writes, I miss her column. What does she plan to do next? Well, she's bought new underwear and there's a new chapter coming up. But he wants to know, is there a book in the works? She has a buyer here. Are you doing a book?
Not a column memoir. I am writing, and I'm already in the middle of it, a family story, not a pleasant family story, but for my boys. And that's what I'm telling myself, that if I say, oh, I'm working on a book, I mean, this is all my wordplay in my head. If I say I'm working on a book, then its success or failure depends on whether anybody publishes it. So I'm trying to convince myself I'm working on an account of this thing that happened in my family for my children.
Well, good luck with that, and good luck with the next chapter. And the underwear reference was just because you said in a column, when you start new adventures, you often buy new underwear.
Oh, lest anybody think you
right. So everybody understands the reference. Thank you, Leah, and congratulations
again. Thank you.
On quite a career.
Really fun to be here.
Fun to have you. Leah Garcia. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.